Today on Maine Calling, young people who grow up in rural Maine. People from rural Maine are not a monolithic group. Just like any category, there's no one way to describe rural youth. But some things do come with the territory for those who grow up in a small town or remote countryside. There are the usual challenges. It's harder to access resources and educational opportunities or jobs. And there are also the benefits. Being part of a close-knit community, connection to the outdoors, peace and quiet, and no traffic. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today, we'll explore how coming from rural Maine affects young people, for better or for worse. What happens when they set out to make a life in a more urban setting? What do they need to overcome obstacles? And how often do they choose to return to the rural life? And what pulls them back? What it means to be a young person from small-town Maine. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Growing up in rural Maine has its challenges and its benefits. Today, we're going to focus on the rural youth in our state and their outlook about their future. My guests are Jacqueline Edmondson, president of the University of Southern Maine. Don Carpenter is board president of the Rural Youth Institute. And Jessica Leahy is professor of human dimensions with the School of Forest Resources at the University of Maine. Join the conversation. Are you or were you a young person from rural Maine? How did it affect you? And did you see it as an advantage or a disadvantage? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And President Edmondson, Jackie, I want to start with you because I understand you have a special interest in the students who are from rural backgrounds because you yourself grew up in a rural area. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Thank you so much, Cindy, and thank you for having me on the show this morning. I came from a rural area of Pennsylvania. My first home was a trailer on my grandparents' farm, and I grew up very much attached to the farm. So much of my growing up years were spent there, and I was the first in my family to go to college. My experience was having my grandfather drive me there in his F-100 pickup truck with all of my things in the back, and he smoked unfiltered cigarettes. So by the time I got to college, I smelled like I had been smoking and I didn't smoke. But I remember it was the first time I think I had ever seen him cry when he said goodbye to me. I mean, it was just a big deal that I went off to college. And going back home to the farm that first Christmas was really difficult because it was hard to talk about the things that I had learned and the experiences that I had at college with my family who cared very much about me. And so I do seek out rural students just to understand what their experiences are. My first faculty appointment was at the University of Minnesota Morris, and that was a very different rural community than the community I grew up in. And I started to do research in rural communities and rural education at that time because I realized that rural communities are complex. These are places that are very rich in history and people, and they're all very different. So even in the state of Maine, as I become acquainted with rural communities and with students who are from rural areas, I deeply appreciate the fact that there are so many nuances and so many things to learn. And I've enjoyed getting to know our students who are from rural areas of Maine. They're just really incredible. And I love hearing about what it's like for them to come from rural Maine to our Gorham campus, to our Portland campus, to our Lewiston campus, to really understand what their goals and aspirations are.
Well, so you really have empathy for them. That's wonderful. And we will talk with some students later and hear about their experiences. And we'll talk more with you about some of those challenges and opportunities you found that they share with you. But let's turn to Jessica now, because Jessica, I understand you too have a rural background. Tell us how you grew up.
I grew up in Alaska. I've been in Maine for coming on my 19th anniversary this August. But yeah, I grew up 10 miles outside of a town called Eagle River, Alaska. I got running water when I was four, heated with wood. And while I'll always be from away, I felt like I found home when I was able to get a faculty position at the University of Maine. And so I've been trying to study rural youth and their residential aspirations, their educational aspirations, and try to make a difference in Maine through my research.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit about that research. In doing that, you I assume have a sense of the demographics of rural youth in Maine and what that means. So, who are we talking about and how much of Maine is rural or rural young people?
Yeah, a large percentage of the state is classified as rural. We're one of the more rural states in the US. And our work, which was funded by the US Department of Agriculture because it related to rural economic development, focused on northern Somerset and all of Piscataquis County. So that's where we have a good profile of rural youth in those communities. And we had almost 600 students, high school and middle school students, participate in our research. So that's the profile that we can build off of. And what I would say is many of them were born where they're being raised. 85% of them fall into that category. They're often in the same school system the entire time, almost 70% in that category. I think striking is the diversity of families. So 53% of the students in this area were are in two parent families with both biological parents or both parents that they've been with since birth. And then but then that leaves a whole almost half of the students are in other kinds of families, being raised by grandparents, foster parents, blended families of all sorts, aunts, uncles, things like that. And I thought that was interesting. I think also remarkable for the rural youth that we studied were how much they love their communities. That came across in a lot of the survey questions that we asked. And in general, they have very positive school perceptions of their middle school and high school experiences.
Oh, so this is interesting. I mean, I know we don't want to stereotype or categorize them. So, but there are certain traits that you're finding are pretty uniform and other things that differ more than people might think among different rural youth in different communities.
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's turn to you, Don. Your group, your organization is the Rural Youth Institute, and I understand it's very much about kind of pushing the positive, very uplifting, inspiring work that you're doing. So describe what it is that you're aiming to do.
Yeah, well, the Rural Youth Institute is really a think and slash do tank for incubating youth development and effective practices to address some of the challenges that are facing rural youth. I will mention that it's an outgrowth of the past 8 years of my real job, which is the executive director of the Rural Futures Fund, which is a philanthropic initiative to help overcome the aspirations challenge for young people growing up in rural communities. And out of that effort, we've spent about $8 million into what we call the Aspirations Incubator, which is really putting demonstration sites around the state that can to see what effective practices using long-term youth development efforts to help overcome. 67% of Maine schools serve rural areas, but only 29% of young people ages 18 to 24 end up getting or going to post-secondary education. And so we've been really providing a lot of evaluation and research while these five sites have been taking on efforts to address some of the challenges in rural communities. Probably the one thing that we are most focused on is the eighth grade, ninth grade transition. When you think about young people growing up in rural communities, they're usually growing up in places where there are some community schools, maybe pre-K through eighth. And then after eighth grade, they tend to leave their community to a larger regional high school. But everybody in that K through eight school can name, know, and nourish the spark inside that young person. They know who their grandmother is. They know who the auntie is. They know what the passions and sparks inside those youth. And when you talk to those youth in those community schools, they can tell you what they want to do later on in life. As they make the 8-9 transition, those relationships don't tend not to go with them. And we're looking at models that can provide really long-term positive relationships with students as they make that 8-9 transition, while surrounding them with a cohort of students that that are surrounded by peer mentors and adult mentors from their community, and then providing them positive childhood experiences, experiential education, travel to get outside of their own communities to begin to see, experience, understand perspectives that they may not understand if they can't get outside of their communities, which in essence allows them to appreciate where they come from. And by having that contrast. So anyway, that's our effort of trying to figure out what can we do to help provide practical, culturally relevant post-secondary plans that students are bought into, are fired up about, and are ready to go when they leave high school.
That's interesting how there's that just window of opportunity that you're targeting then, that age. Huh. Well, Jackie, Don has highlighted what often is listed as one of the top challenges for rural young people, and that is accessing higher education in particular, or just sort of capturing their interest and ability to pursue education. So talk about that, what you see as, how that presents as a challenge, and what some ways, in addition to what Don's doing, are some opportunities to kind of, have solutions for that.
Yeah, I agree. Certainly capturing the opportunities is important. And then also, I believe capturing the trust of families and communities, allowing them to know that sending their child off to college doesn't mean that it's going to be a terrible experience or something that, college changes everybody, certainly, but just helping families to understand that their student can go back home and work if there are jobs there, that there are many opportunities that come from going to college that are quite important. I think another part of it is creating a sense of belonging for rural students once they get to college, so they understand that there are other rural students here. There are faculty and staff who've come from rural areas, and just highlighting how important it is for students to feel a sense of belonging and a sense of fit here. I talk with the students about what some of the challenges are when they come to the university, and some are relatively easy to address. Some of them are just things like understanding how to drive in an area where there's traffic lights and roundabouts and experiences that they may not have had when they were growing up. Others are a little more complex, like helping the faculty to understand language patterns and discourse and how students communicate when they've come from a place where they've lived for generations on the same land with people in their families who've lived in close proximity to one another for a long time. And that coming here, it's a different kind of language that's used in college, that's used in urban areas. And so, just accepting and understanding rural thinking and rural patterns and rural ways of life, and knowing that our students are coming from, again, as I said earlier, very different rural communities. So I prioritize that sense of belonging and just listening to the students and trying to figure out what they may need when they get here so they can be successful and so their families and communities can be proud of them.
I'm sure our listeners can give examples, but I'm so curious if you can share what you mean when you say language differences. I mean, it's different than a foreign language, and maybe it's slang, or is it just phrases that, are commonplace in rural areas that aren't when you get to the more urban settings?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all of those things. And when I've talked with students about how their peers know that they're from a rural area, to a fault, they tell me it's how they talk. And so to some extent, it is phrases. They talk about the fact that when they're in their rural community, they can be very direct. And again, this is one student's example. She said that she could be very direct because people knew what she meant. because she had grown up there and people understood. But when she came to the university, she found that that directness wasn't something that was expected. She also found this particular student talked about how when she would get grade papers back from faculty members, they would be encouraging her to make revisions in ways that she found confusing because she wanted them to be just very direct. Here's what I want. Here's what you need to do. And so those kinds of understandings and uses of language, I think, are so fascinating and really go back to a sociologist, a sociolinguist, actually, who I followed his work for a long time. His name is James Gee. And he talks about discourse as identity kits and how when you're growing up, your primary discourse group is really that of your family. And that's where you first learn language and patterns of behavior. And then you acquire secondary discourse groups over the course of your life. And so you may be going to church or to school or to a boys and girls club. And the language you use in those places are different. And so the language you use in college is also different. And when you go back home, you probably fall back into the patterns of the language uses there. And so it's a really fascinating understanding, I believe.
Yeah, I think we can all relate to that, whether it's rural conversation or whatever your family is used to saying. But Jessica, why don't you add to what Jackie was just saying?
Yeah, Jackie's talking a lot about rural students who come to the university, and I have those students as well. And one in language related is their experience when they return home to their communities and how they've adopted the language that's used on the campus, and that sometimes they have to code switch and go back and forth, and that it can create their new language can sometimes make them feel a little disconnected from their community when they return.
Interesting. Don, in what you do, are these kinds of having to code switch, having to adapt and sort of, change your identity a little bit? How does that affect mental health among rural youth? Is that something that you have to address?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Obviously, the biggest challenge facing rural youth is in the form of social isolation. And of course, coming off the pandemic hasn't helped at all. And therefore, we have a lot of students who are facing a great deal of mental health challenges and disorders. I would say that, but we have, in many regards, we have solutions. And we just need to begin to, in our case, we believe that you got to put a life on a life and have somebody in that young person's life who's got their finger on the pulse of everything that's going on with that young person. So from a community-based youth development strategy, we first, before we seek to inspire, we're wanting to first seek to deeply understand all aspects of what's happening in that young person's life from the family perspective, within the schools, any extracurriculars, what are their friends and social connections, and begin to say, also understand what the strengths are, because everyone tends to look at the deficits, what's missing, and we're trying to figure out what they're bringing to the table. And therefore, once we deeply understand where a young person is, then we can connect them either to a spark or into a mental health counselor, somebody that can help them. But they need somebody in their life to be that liaison, the liaison between the schools and the community, the liaison between the mental health professionals and the family, liaison between their own existence and their family. And so what we're trying to do is have what we call a relationship router in their lives, somebody that has deep relationships with everybody in that small community who is a stakeholder for kids. And once I understand and deeply understand that young person and they trust me, and there's things that show up in their lives over the course of their adolescence we can connect them to those resources, whether it's in their local community or regionally or whatever it might be, because not all rural communities have all those resources. But we're building the connections and kind of asset mapping regionally as a way to bring those services to support students and really kind of taking a 360 degrees approach of serving the whole student.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing up that whole concept that they come to the table with a lot of advantages and to tap into those. We do need to take a quick break. We will talk with a young person from rural Maine after that. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Our topic today is the challenges and opportunities for young people from rural communities in Maine. Joining me, Don Carpenter is Executive Director of Rural Futures Fund and Board President of the Rural Youth Institute. Jessica Leahy is a professor with UMaine School of Forest Resources, and Jackie Edmondson is president of the University of Southern Maine. Join the conversation. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And calling in now is Vivian Noakes. She is a rural youth organizer in Washington County with the organization Just Me, Just Us. Oh, Just Me for Just Us. Vivian, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Cindy. Great to be here.
Yeah, so we heard a little bit about our panelists and how they grew up. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm from away, but I've lived here for 10 years, and I spent a good amount of my adolescence here and being a teenager here. And, you know, I was like many young Mainers where I felt like this was a very low-key place to be, not a whole lot to do, and I could not wait to go to college and get out of Maine, to be honest. But it wasn't until I lived that lifestyle of being in an urbanized area that I realized how much rural Maine has captivated me, and I'm bound to it.
No, that's not an uncommon story, though, right? I mean, you know others who are like that, too. They went away and then appreciated what they had.
Exactly. Like, there's nothing quite like this place.
Great. And what is it that you do as a rural youth organizer for the group Just Me for Just Us? And explain that name, first of all, and what the group does.
Well, it's an acronym for Just Maine for Justice, mm-hmm. and it's supposed to mean just for us, by Mainers, for Mainers, and also justice. So what we're really trying to do is stir up more civic engagement among rural youth, especially because they have so much expertise in what's going on in this area and oftentimes are not necessarily heard by the people who need to hear from them. So we're really trying to bridge that gap and put forth more youth voices.
And what do you sense from the other young people that you're working with in terms of what they need or want? Or is there a common challenge that you're seeing?
Absolutely. I mean, there's apathy around the state of the world and whether or not we have any kind of hope in terms of fixing this society. And then there's also just so much, I guess, indecision and lack of seeing each other's point of view. There can be a lot of division. But I think most of the time these issues are underpinned by economic problems, like lack of public transportation to get to jobs, lack of jobs that are paying well enough for people to get housing, you know, lack of educational opportunities sometimes. And I think, and this division and isolation, it can really disempower people. And I think what we're really trying to do is put people in the same place so they hear one another's experiences and can see each other, themselves in each other, and work towards taking local action.
So it sounds like some of those things, that, list of all the things that are affecting people is pretty common among all youth, not just rural, although some, would you say some of those are worse because they're in rural areas?
I think the public transportation is one of the main issues. I keep hearing this over and over again in my conversations with youth about how are we supposed to get a job to buy a car if all of the jobs are in towns that are a half hour drive away. So if you're living in a rural spot, you need to have that economic support from your parents to drive you to your job. Until you can make enough money to buy your own transportation.
Yeah,
Not
that's
having public transportation really debilitates people's opportunities, not only to get jobs, but to just have community and to see their friends and to go to a skate park or to go to, meet up with people, which that connection is vital for youth development.
really good points, Vivian. And I wanted to ask you one more question and then let you go. I'm just curious if you think there's a stereotype of rural youth and whether it's a, if there is one, if it's a misconception.
I really wouldn't know. I haven't lived in urbanized Maine, so I don't know what they think of rural Mainers, but I think potentially yes, but everyone here is so diverse in their thoughts and opinions, and you really can't judge a book by its cover here. You never know what's going to come out of someone's mouth here.
As is the case everywhere, right? Thank you so much, Vivian, for sharing your insights. Vivian Noakes is a rural youth organizer in Washington County with a Just Me for Just Us, which is Just Maine for Justice organization. Thanks for calling, Vivian. And Jessica, Vivian brought up the issue of jobs and the difficulty for rural youth in getting jobs. Can you tell me a little bit about what your research looked like and if it tied to that to some degree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think so one of the things that came out from us looking at this question was just how much is going on in the state related to youth workforce development. There are so many people really committed to this. So the Rural Aspirations Project comes to mind, the Four Main Workforce Development Committee, Dawn's work, Maine Tree Foundations, Forestry Immersion. I'm really focused on the forest adjacent communities. Soil and water conservation districts are doing all this youth. I mean, there's a lot of focus on rural youth and trying to help them prepare for the workforce. What I liked about what Vivian said was just the value of youth voice. And so one and another sort of great thing that came out of our work, on top of just how many organizations and individuals are working to support rural youth, the other thing was just the value of the youth voice and their accuracy and their sense of they really know what's going on. They in our work, they also identified public transportation issues related to substance use, not enough jobs, not enough economic resources. Many aspired for higher ed or other career technical education, but when we compared their aspirations to what they expected, there was this big gap, and it was related to their perceptions of cost. And so these high schoolers, middle schoolers, they really know what's going on, and we should listen to them.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. Let's go to a call now from Rob calling from Barrington, New Hampshire. Hi, Rob. Go ahead.
Good morning. I tuned in late, but I'm part of an organization that helps connect college students as near-peer mentors to the kinds of high school students who are not necessarily headed for college because they come from non-college families or they've been not put in the honors program. And the idea is that by focusing on questions, listening to students, and helping getting into a dialogue with their near-peer mentors, they form partnerships, and there's a partnership between the high school and the college, so that the college takes an interest in more than just cherry-picking the brightest, the best and the brightest, but really helping students with a lot of potential but not a lot of motivation get more out of their high schools and begin to see themselves as citizens of the world, because somebody's listening to them and talking with them about how do we make a better future for ourselves and the society that our parents seem to have left us with.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Rob. And you said it's a nonprofit. Do you want to share the name of that?
Sure. It's called the New American Baccalaureate Project. New American Baccalaureate Project. And I'll post a link to it on your website.
Terrific. Thank you. You can go to our Facebook page or Instagram as well. But thanks for calling, Rob. And Jackie, I know all of you have already mentioned the importance of mentorship, but that whole concept of, you know, you don't know what you don't know, right? For a lot of these rural youth who may not have anybody who has experience with these issues in higher education or just what path to take.
That's correct. And I do think mentoring is a key part of student success. We see that with our Promise Scholars program, which serves first generation students, many of whom come from rural areas. They have peer mentors. They have a director of the program who's very much in touch with the students. And the Promise Scholars program is something that ensures that students graduate from the university without debt. And so getting those connections, and I'd like to follow up and learn more about what Ron is doing, but getting those connections early on and helping to mentor students who are coming from from high school into the university is a priority and something that is important to me, and it's important to the other universities that are part of the University of Maine system.
Okay, let's go now, because joining us on the line now is Thomas Watt. He is 22. He's from Greenville, has an MBA, and works as an operations manager at his family's store. And he served on a USM panel with Jackie about rural youth. Thanks for calling in, Tom.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
Good. So I understand that you are not only from rural Maine, but you count as a real Mainer according to tough standards of real Mainers. So how far back has your family lived in Maine?
My family's been in this region for the past seven generations, but first came to Maine 20 generations ago.
20? So that's,
yeah,
what year are we talking about?
My brother and I are the 20th. It's actually 400 years this year, 1624.
Okay. So I don't know many people who could top that. That's great. and for you, being from rural Maine, have you seen that as an advantage or a disadvantage as you've gone through your young
adulthood? I certainly feel it's an advantage. There's been challenges like there is for everybody from all walks of life, but it's certainly an advantage in my view through the community connections that you grow up with, the difference in lifestyle. And I've lived in Portland, which is to somebody from a place like Greenville, that is a real city. but I definitely feel that I've had a lot of advantages having been from a close-knit community with a lot of history and connections.
And that feeds into the question I had for you, because you're back in Greenville, right? And yet we often hear that young people from rural areas are just itching to get out and move somewhere else. So what are you seeing in terms of the idea of either wanting to move out of your hometown versus staying in place and coming back and being part of the community?
I was certainly excited to go to college, but it was always with the intention to come home. And a pretty decent portion of my high school classmates have had the same path. Certainly the older generations, like my grandfather's generation that were from here, most of them stayed right close to home and never really left. But it's certainly, I felt that one of the reasons I love my community for a lot of reasons, but I always felt strongly that to a degree I had a duty to come back and contribute to it after all that my community had done for me growing up.
Well, so we've heard a lot of the good of coming from rural Maine. Would you point out anything that's been challenging or difficult?
There's a lot of challenges around access to technology and experiences that a larger part of the population has that are really technologically and infrastructure related. One of the other things I experienced a lot as I got into college and college classes, that kind of thing, was being able to find peers that could relate to my lived experiences. When we would introduce ourselves in the first day of college classes, the fun fact I would always use about myself is that I had gone to school and graduated with a class of 24. And we were a big class. The class below me was 12, but that always shocks people.
So that's not a classroom. That's your whole grade.
Yes. That was my whole graduating class was 24.
Well, so that brings me to a question I asked Vivian earlier. Just do you think that people make assumptions or have stereotypes about young people from rural Maine in terms of, you know, their personalities, their attitudes?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I remember quite specifically, actually, while I was a student at USM and I was elected onto the board of the Honor Student Organization. The other officers, they had all known each other previously. It was my first year at USM. They shared with me after I got elected when we first met for the first time that they had been really nervous that I was going to be some kind of backwards hillbilly. Oh. Because of where I was from. All they had known about me was where I was from. And they meant it well. They weren't trying to insult me by saying that, but yeah, that was their initial assumption.
That's interesting. Well, clearly you're not, and we're really glad you were able to call in today to share some of your thoughts. Thank you. That was Tom Watt. He studied business. He is from Greenville, where he works in his family's business. And it is time to take another quick break. We are talking about what matters to rural youth in Maine. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. My guests are UMaine Professor Jessica Leahy, USM President Jackie Edmondson, and Rural Youth Institute's Don Carpenter. We are talking about young people growing up in rural Maine. Share your questions or comments. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to a caller. This is Sam calling from Hancock County. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi, Cindy. How are you today?
Great. Good. What did you want to talk about?
Excellent. Well, I work for an organization called Eastern Maine Development Corporation, and I am the director of our youth services program. We serve young Mainers ages 14 to 24, both in school and out of school, and we serve 9 counties throughout northeast and central western Maine. So it just seemed appropriate to call and talk a little bit of our program.
And how do you help the young people?
Absolutely. So our focus and our mission is really to empower youth through workforce development, getting them prepared for employment and higher education. That can be anything from post-secondary education, occupational skills training, and help getting them into apprenticeships, into the trades. You know, there are just so many things that we can provide, but a big piece to our programs is paid work experience. It allows young people to practice soft skills, explore different career pathways, what their passions are. And it's also connecting young Mainers with employers and businesses in their communities. You know, I've heard so many of these youth are rural, and that's huge. So, yeah.
Wow, great to hear about that. Thank you for calling, Sam. And Don, I'm just curious, does some of this resonate in terms of the overlap in what you see is needed for the young people you're working with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that there are many students that we've worked with that have a desire or an inkling about what they want to do or what major they want to go towards in college, but have very few opportunities during their middle school and high school years to actually have a practical experience within that particular profession or major. And therefore, many of the youth decide to go, and then they get there and they're in math 101 and deciding, like, why am I here? I'm going into debt. I'm majoring in psychology. I have no experience in psychology. I feel a fish out of water. I'm out of here. And that happens a great deal. And we've had many students in terms of interviewing them after their first and second year of college to come back and say, yeah, I wasn't really sure why I was there. I thought I wanted to go, but now what? And so, you know, we've got to provide them opportunities, real life opportunities to be in touch with career mentors, job shadows, internships during the middle school and high school experience so that they can sometimes realize that actually isn't what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to do that, but now I realize I don't want to do that. In fact, I had a really interesting experience where I had a student doing an internship through at a PT business, physical therapy, and she would go, and it was just a month long, just a quick opportunity, but I would check in every week with her and the business, and they were like, "She's great." She would say, "Yeah, I really, I'm showing up. It seems great." Afterwards, about a month later, and she was a senior, and I said, "What do you think? You got into university in New England. You want to go towards PT? Are you going to do it?" And she said, "Nope, I'm not." And I said, "Why?" She said, "Don, you don't understand. I would be in my car outside of the experience, you know, the physical therapy, and I would have to psych myself up to go in there because I didn't realize how much one-on-one time it meant to be with other people. I'm so introverted." And so the idea of her going to spend $52,000 on a college education and not getting to, you know, probably the actual in-person working with people one-on-one until the second or third or fourth year meant that she wouldn't have known that until then. So we've got to figure out ways much earlier to provide students an understanding of not just what they want to do, but maybe what they don't want to do.
That's just as useful. Yes, thank you. And thank you for calling, Sam. Good to hear about what you're doing. Let's go now to our caller, Charlotte Smallwood. She is 18 years old and grew up in the Old Town area. She's a recent graduate of the Rural Youth Institute's Aspirations Incubator that Don told us about, and she serves as a peer mentor. Charlotte, thanks for giving us a call.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Good. And we were just talking about when people are making their decisions about what to do with schooling and what they want to go into. I understand you're headed to UMaine in the fall. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So coming from a rural background, was heading to college something that you thought you would do all along? Was it expected of you?
I think definitely I went back and forth of whether or not I'd be able to do it. I think more I was more scared to go out of state. I stayed in state for my first year to be able to figure out where I want to go. But a lot of my family come from the Sherman Patton area, and college was something that seemed like an opportunity that was out of reach for those students because the school had very little opportunities for them there to be able to experience what college is like. Luckily, I grew up in the Old Town area where we were able to have different clubs like Equity Committee, River Runners, and especially with the early college program, I was close to Orno to be able to go in person to classes and participate in those things. So I think as far as seeing myself be able to do that, I definitely struggled to see where I belonged or what school I could go to that made sense to me and what was within my ability of being able to go there.
Okay, so what is it you hope to study?
I am hoping to pursue a law degree. I would really love to become a lawyer. I plan on probably going to New York, but I think a part of me would love to be able to participate in being a lawyer in usually the central Maine area, maybe in Portland. But I think as far as now, I'm not 100% sure where I want to go, but I know that I have the support system that I need to make whatever decision I need to.
No, that's a very mature perspective. That's great. And you work as a peer mentor for with the Aspirations Incubator. What does that entail?
A lot of it is going on the same trips as our younger cohorts and being able to guide them through like moving positions. Like a lot of the kids that I worked with were coming into their freshman year of high school. And I remember when I was in that position, it would have been nice to have someone to look at me in the hallway and say, "Hello, how are you?" and be able to recognize me and know that when I'm going to, I don't know, NHS meetings that there's someone there that does care about me and wants to know what's going on with my life. So that's a lot of what I did in school, is making sure that I could see friendly faces that I knew, being able to push them to do things that I was doing as well, and be able to walk them through going to in-person college classes, being able to join certain clubs, knowing that they have a lot of time to figure out what they want to do or where they want to go. And I think a lot of what we did mostly was going on camping trips with them and being able to be one-on-one with them and be able to see how their dynamic of their own group works, and being able to look out for what kids probably need the most help with, being able to see what's going on and see their opportunity in the school.
Wow, that's really great. And something you mentioned earlier about, you know, where you are in the Old Town area, I think there is a conception that those in rural areas are not around a lot of diversity, but is that the case for you? Racial, ethnic diversity, for example, or in other kinds of diversity where you grew up?
I think it's mostly correct, but however, I think more in recent years, I started meeting more and more different people. I mean, recently, we had a transfer student that came from Colombia. She's Venezuelan, and I became very good friends with her through that. And we have very few students that are, I would say, ethnically diverse, but we have all kinds of students that are in the LGBTQ community, the students that are economically diverse. I think it's hard when you're in Old Town to be able to see a large group of different people from different places. But I think there are some people, it's just a lot of times I noticed in our school, a lot of people were too afraid to interact with people that were different to them because they've never done that before.
Right. Well, thank you for all your great insights and for joining us today. Charlotte Smallwood is from Old Town and is a peer mentor for the Rural Youth Institute's Aspirations Incubator. She is planning to attend UMaine in the fall. Thanks, Charlotte. And let's go now to a call from, Susan. Susan is calling in from Bangor. Hi, Susan. What did you want to talk about?
Hi there. Thank you so much. I work with Sam, who spoke earlier, but my name is Susan. I work for Eastern Maine Development Corporation, and I'm the Senior Director of Workforce and Business Services. And I really wanted to touch base on kind of what Dawn was saying after, when he was talking a little bit about, you know, we need to help them before they get to those points of getting debt or knowing what they want to do. I've had an opportunity in partnership with the community college system and some local organizations where we've created things like that. Like, industry exploration is really important for the youth. Being able to expose them to what's out there, like the labor market, the jobs that are out there, the employers that exist, but letting them see it through the eyes of education, but also through the eyes of those who are doing the job. Charlotte is a prime example, the real stories, real people, real faces, and being able to continue to tell those stories of opportunities. And I think the other piece that's important is that with rural youth especially, is that they have more barriers of getting to some of the services. So I think being intentional with organizations like ours and other community members to really go to where they are, go into the schools, go into the communities, and really get into those smaller towns that don't have the accessibility.
Well, thank you for calling, Susan, and I'm sure our panelists have something to add to that. Jessica, go ahead, as far as what Susan was describing.
Yeah, Susan, and then also what Charlotte was saying, I think it's important to recognize that rural youth can return to rural spaces at any point in time, whether after college, when they're ready to raise a family, when they retire. There's lots of opportunities. And there's also going to another rural community. So you might have been raised in one and you go become a lawyer, but your town doesn't need a lawyer. There's already maybe one there, probably not, but you might be able to find another rural community and still contribute and still have that same sorts of rural community assets and strengths. So you can return home, or you could return to a new rural home.
You're nodding, Jackie. Go ahead.
I completely agree. I think there are just so many opportunities. And I think one of the things that has impressed me with the session that you posted today, Cindy, is the number of opportunities and people who are interested in serving rural youth in Maine. The fact that nearly one of two students is from rural Maine is really important. And there are many opportunities and pathways for them. And it's great to to learn more about that. So thank you for featuring this in your show today.
Well, thank you for all for joining us. And I'm sorry to those of you who we didn't get to today, more to talk about. So we'll come back to this topic again. Jacqueline Edmondson is president of the University of Southern Maine. Don Carpenter is board president of the Rural Youth Institute and with the Rural Futures Fund. And Jessica Leahy is professor of human dimensions with the UMaine School of Forest Resources. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Visit the Maine Calling website to find our past programs or to sign up for our weekly newsletter. And if you're looking for an easy way to interact with Maine Calling, download the Maine Public Vox Pop app. You can record your comments there, and we might be able to use them on the show. Tomorrow on the program, we will talk all about extreme sports in Maine. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.